Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Welcome to Africa Link. I'm Isaac Mugabe in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, Rwandans are baffled by yet another leaked UN report alleging that their country is backing M23 rebels.
Most of them are shocked and they're wondering how come another report is surfacing. I mean, how come there are more reports and they're all being refuted by the government?
As Kenya's Prime Minister vows to contest the presidency, we ask whether the fear of violence still lingers.
Kenyans are not worried about a repeat of 2008 post-election violence, not of now.
These stories and more to come in this edition of Africa Link, straight from the studios of Deutsche Welle here in Bonn, Germany. Stay with us.
Top story.
The Rwandan government has said it is committed to the ongoing efforts by regional leaders to bring peace in eastern Congo, despite yet another UN-leaked report accusing Rwanda and Uganda of backing the M23 rebels. Addressing a press conference in Kigali, Rwanda's Foreign Affairs Minister, Louise Mushikiwabo, condemned the report by the UN group of experts, adding that their biased reports will not contribute in solving the complex governance and security problem in the DRC. Before we came to the studios, I spoke to DW correspondent in Kigali, Flora Kaitesi, and I started off by asking her the current state of relations between Rwanda and the DRC.
Well, Isaac, the current relations between Rwanda and DRC are pretty much unpredictable. On the one hand, Rwanda has maintained that it is committed to the regional initiative of the International Conference on the Great Lakes region. And that regional initiative, of course, is to find ways, tangible solutions to pacify eastern DRC. But on the other hand, the DRC has publicly criticized Rwanda. It has publicly said that Rwanda has invaded their territory. And for example, there's even several programs on the DRC's national television that allege that Rwanda has been involved in the insecurity in the eastern part of the Democratic Republic of Congo. So it's not easy to tell exactly where the relations stand.
What are ordinary Rwandans saying about this latest leaked report by the UN group of experts accusing Rwanda of supporting the M23 rebels and, of course, the FDLR attacks on Rwanda's territory?
Well, the Rwandans that I've managed to speak to are actually perplexed. Most of them are shocked and they're wondering how come another report is surfacing. I mean, how come there are more reports and they're all being refuted by the government of Rwanda? I mean, to them, it does not make any sense because they have been refuted as baseless. And basically what they're saying is that are these reports coming to bring any kind of change to the situation in DRC? Do they have maybe an objective to address the security situation or to probably make the lives of the Congolese better? Or because so many lives have been lost and there's so many refugees and there is a humanitarian crisis. So there's so many questions attached to this latest report. So many are perplexed. They're wondering, why now? Why do these reports keep coming? I mean, it doesn't make any sense to them.
Are there signs in Kigali that Rwandans remain optimistic about the future, especially that now some European countries have, again, cut aid like Britain did recently? What do they say? What do they think?
Well, it is obvious that many Rwandans were worried. They are worried that the aid cuts or delays would obviously have implications on the economy. But earlier today, the Minister of Finance was in Parliament because he was summoned alongside the Minister of Defense and Minister of Foreign Affairs to, you know, give explanations on the DRC crisis and its implications on Rwanda. And the minister said that the aid cuts and the delays do not have a very big impact on Rwanda's economy because those aid cuts actually constitute 12% of the Rwandan budget. But he assured Rwandans that whatever he has in the budget is able to cater for the 2012-2013 fiscal year.
I was speaking to Flora Kaitesi. Now, the two major crises gnawing away at Africa, the wars in Mali and the DRC, are troubling some of Germany's policy makers. There is a sense that Berlin, perhaps for the noblest of historical motives, is not doing as much as it should or could, both in its own interests and the interests of those countries it is purporting to help. This analysis by Ute Schaefer has been adapted for Africa Link by Mark Codwell.
The crises in the Democratic Republic of Congo and in Mali could have horrendous consequences, though for different reasons. In the DRC, the regions feel little loyalty or obligation to the centre of power in Kinshasa. In the east of the country, there is no properly functioning police force or administration or an adequate road network. The first democratic elections in the DRC in 2006, which were supervised by European states, have not been followed up by nation building, but the violence that blighted the country for decades has remained. Because of the interwoven ethnic links with neighbouring countries and an abundance of valuable mineral deposits, the conflict in the DRC could plunge the whole of East Africa into chaos. Back in the late 1990s, more than 5 million people lost their lives in the Second Congo War. It was Africa's deadliest war, involving 8 African nations. In Mali, jihadists and rebel groups are busy terrorizing the population of what was once a tolerant Muslim state, a model of African development. The terror network Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb, which is active in several Sahel states, has well-established ties to groups in sub-Saharan Africa. They pose a very real danger for Europe. A zone of terror could soon stretch from the western Sahel across northern Nigeria to the East African coast. The weaker African states are already providing sanctuary for radical Islamists. Gunter Nauka is German Chancellor Angela Merkel's Commissioner for African Affairs. He says it is time German policymakers and the public started taking these new risks seriously.
We need a debate about military policy, security policy. I would say we need a public debate about the whole gamut of German foreign policy.
He was referring to the sort of debate that routinely takes place in Germany's neighbours, Britain and France, because of their long colonial history and decades of experience in foreign and security policy. Germany, it should be remembered, only gained full sovereignty as late as 1990. Germany helped to secure the DRC elections in 2006. Its involvement is now also needed in Mali. More specifically, Berlin has been asked to contribute military instructors from the Bundeswehr, the German armed forces. But the German government refuses to place this anywhere near the top of the agenda. It clearly fears any sort of public debate about the German military so close to an election. The development spokeswoman for the opposition Greens, Uta Kocsi, believes the government's reticence is ill-advised.
I think Germany has had an obligation to get involved in Africa. We need to analyse what options are open to us in this regard. We can no longer simply duck out of our responsibilities.
That analysis was written by Ute Schaefer, Deutsche Welle's editor-in-chief, and was adapted for Africa Link by Mark Codwell.
Africa Link, bringing you the story behind the story.
The battle lines in Kenya's upcoming elections were drawn Tuesday as Prime Minister Raila Odinga unveiled a political coalition to contest the presidency of East Africa's economic powerhouse. Thousands of Kenyans gathered in downtown Nairobi to witness the inking of a deal between Odinga, Vice President Kalonzo Musyoka and others in the run-up to a vote on March 4th that is expected to be contested fiercely. Odinga's coalition will go up against Deputy Prime Minister Uhuru Kenyatta and former Education Minister William Ruto. For more on these political alliances being formed in Kenya, I spoke to our correspondent in Nairobi, James Shimanyula.
Well, Odinga is still powerful in the sense that he shares power with President Kibaki in the Grand Coalition. But when you range Odinga's force that has just been formed, or the alliance, if we can call it that way, ranging it against Ruto and Uhuru Kenyatta, you find that the arithmetic will give you the following. Ruto controls virtually Kenya's Great Rift Valley, which has year in during the elections every election it counts who is the winner. Central region controlled by Uhuru now has always contributed to the basket from Rift Valley to make the winner. So when you compare the two Hague-bound suspects, that's Uhuru and Ruto, to the force that has just been formed, you find that it is still stronger. I mean, Uhuru and Ruto are still stronger because they control virtually every vote in the two regions I've mentioned.
It's clear that all these alliances are formed along tribal and ethnic lines. Aren't Kenyans worried of a repeat of the 2008 post-election violence?
Well, I agree with you that they are formed along tribal alliances or ethnic lines. Kenyans, first of all, I must assure you that they're actually not worried because they know very well that there is a pending case at The Hague and four people have been charged. They will be going there. So they're eagerly waiting for the outcome of that case. Although, as we speak again, interestingly, a group of civilians has gone to court yet again to file a case against Ruto and Uhuru Kenyatta to test their integrity, that they are not fit to stand in the elections this coming year because they have a case at The Hague. But generally, Kenyans are not worried about a repeat of 2008 post-election violence, not of now.
Other than the violence, following all this drama surrounding the alliances, Kenyans at least enthusiastic about registering to vote, or do they seem not to make sense out of all this political drama unfolding?
President Kibaki spoke earlier Tuesday, and all he's telling people is to register in large numbers. He had a point to speak. He rarely speaks about that, because the expectation of the registration was supposed to surpass some 12 million as we speak today, this date, the 4th of December. But so far, they have only registered 6 million voters. And with a country of about 30 million young people with the rest, they expected to have recorded more voters.
James Shimanyula in Nairobi.
Africa on the Move.
Africa is set for a major economic boom following a new initiative to open up markets through infrastructure development. The last 10 years have been unprecedented construction activity and investments in roads and bridges in Eastern Africa, opening up the region and giving farmers access to markets. One of these projects is the Arusha-Namanga-Athi River Highway, which links Tanzania with Kenya. Our reporter Alfred Kitty has been following closely this new trend and filed the following report.
The new highway, which was officially opened last Wednesday by the East African Community Heads of State, is part of a new drive to create traffic infrastructure for agriculture, trade and tourism. Among those speaking at the official opening of the Arusha-Namanga-Athi River Highway was President Jakaya Kikwete of Tanzania.
It is through joint efforts undertaken by our governments and the auspices of the East African community that we were able to get money from the African Development Bank and the government of Japan to do the Athi River Namanga Arusha road that we are inaugurating today.
The reason for the African Development Bank's interest in funding such major projects lies in the increase in the volume of trade that can be expected in the near future. Alex Rugamba is the African Development Bank Director for NEPAD, Regional Integration and Trade.
The African Development Bank is supporting a number of infrastructure projects on the continent, and a number of these projects are directly related to facilitating trade. For example, construction of transport corridors, improvement of railways, and improvement of some of the ports on the continent.
Some of the projects partly funded by the African Development Bank are the Arusha-Namanga-Athi River Road linking Tanzania and Kenya, the Fort Poto-Bodibujo Road linking Uganda with Tanzania, the Nairobi-Thika Highway, which is part of the Trans-African Highway linking Kenya with Ethiopia, a major regional economy with close to 85 million people. As the volume of goods transported by road increases, there is a parallel need to rehabilitate the railway system to ease the load on the roads, according to Kenyan President Mwai Kibaki.
Currently, less than 5% of cargo in East Africa is moved by rail. This puts a major strain on our roads. And with volumes expected to triple in the next 15 years, the problem will become more pronounced. It is therefore critical for us to invest heavily in rehabilitating and expanding our railway system.
However, apart from investing in transport infrastructure, it would be prudent for the region to embark on electricity generation as part of economic development, Uganda President Yoweri Museveni says.
The East African community created a market of 140 million people. COMESA is a market of about 385 million people. SADC is a market of about 230 million people. However, these markets lack infrastructure to link them and electricity to power production.
The projects reflect the common will of the citizens of Eastern Africa region to cement their integration process through the elimination of physical and non-physical barriers that separate them.
Alfred Kitty with that report. The leader of Sierra Leone's opposition party, Julius Maada Bio, says he will now accept the results of the recent presidential elections after initially calling on a boycott of all government activities. The mood in Sierra Leone's capital, Freetown, is optimistic as many believe this election means the country has finally shown the world it is time it moved away from its image as an unstable post-conflict nation. From Freetown, Damon van der Linde reports.
Emotions ran high during Sierra Leone's election in the tropical November heat. The incumbent president, Ernest Bai Koroma, won a convincing victory with nearly 60% of the total vote. The process was judged for the most part as having been free and fair by both local and international observers. But the opposition, led by former Civil War time junta leader Julius Maada Bio, disagreed.
You will recall that we had earlier stated our position that we cannot accept results of any rigged elections. We believe that the process was fraudulent and the results do not reflect the will of the people of Sierra Leone.
The opposition told its elected members to boycott government proceedings. They also filed a court case to contest the results. Though there were only minor instances of violence throughout the election process, the civil war that ended just over 10 years ago is still present in the minds of most people in the country. Alusan Karbo has run an internet cafe in the capital since just after the war ended.
The average Sierra Leonean is afraid of God, and we are afraid of going back to past because we were one time in war, whereas we don't want that same thing to happen again. So I believe that everything is quiet and peaceful and will continue to stay that way. Mm.
Now in December, the cool Harmattan winds blow down from the Sahara. The political climate has also cooled as party leaders met at State House to reconcile, saying they're willing to set aside their differences for the good of the country. The opposition Sierra Leone People's Party now say they accept the re-election of President Koroma and will return to work when they feel their concerns have been addressed. From his seventh-floor office, Communications Minister Ibi Karbo says the government is ready to begin running the country with the participation of all political parties.
We are open, and the president has emphasized that he is going to operate and work towards a government of inclusiveness and a government with a national character.
Below, in the shade of the building, Hassan Bangura leafs through a newspaper showing a picture of the two party leaders shaking hands. Though a supporter of the opposition SLPP, he says he believes it's now more important that Sierra Leone unifies as a country than seeing his party in power.
Well, I think for the peace of the whole country, for because our country not too long ago was in some war and it held us back so much in development. I think we don't want to slide back into that. Accepting the results will help us move forward and it will develop the country.
Though the court case contesting election results remains open and members of the opposition are still in police custody for election-related offenses, the party leadership says they are optimistic about continuing talks with the government.
Diamond van der Linde in Freetown.
Making a difference.
Among the lineup of parliamentarians in the North German city state of Hamburg is an unusual figure. Elombo Bolayela, originally from the DRC, is among the city's lawmakers. He fled his homeland at the age of 27 and now uses his political office in Germany to focus on the needs of migrants. DW's Philip Sandner went to visit him in Bremen. His report has been adapted for Africa Link by Susan Holton.
Outside.
Elombo Bolayela enters a do-it-yourself store in Bremen. He's worked there for 13 years. He's a well-known and respected figure in the city. The man, born in what is now the DRC, has built up a new life for himself in Germany, and he's also a member of the Works Council. Bolayela likes playing an active role. A year ago, he became the first and only parliamentarian in Germany to be born in Africa. When he first arrived in Germany, Bolayela never dreamt that he would one day enter politics here. He was not initially one of the Social Democrats' leading candidates in Bremen, but local people took a shine to him and gave him a better-than-expected result at a recent election.
I have had good experiences with the people of Bremen. They seem to like me. Perhaps it has something to do with my belief that all people are good.
Bolayela's start in Germany wasn't easy. He had to leave the country of his birth, the former Zaire, now DRC, 20 years ago. At that time, Mobutu Sese Seko was in power. He did little for his country. The economy collapsed, the standard of living declined. Elombo Bolayela was there when the democracy movement began in the 1990s.
As a student,
I first heard the word democracy when I was a student in 1991. I asked my professor, what's that? He said, it's a good political system that brings about development. Every one of us has the chance to become a government minister or a teacher, and we'd get more roads.
The feeling that there would be a new beginning seized hold of the young Bolayela. On February the 16th, 1992, a Sunday, he joined tens of thousands of people demonstrating against Mobutu. A peaceful demonstration was planned, but it ended in a bloodbath. Soldiers opened fire on the crowd. Some 200 people were killed. Soon after, Bolayela fled and eventually arrived in Germany. As an asylum seeker, he fought for years for the right to stay here. When asked what gave him the strength to persevere here in Germany, he says it was the people who stood up for him, including the local church congregation. Bolayela began to take an active interest in politics. This brought him to the attention of the deputies in the regional parliament, where he himself is now a respected member. It's thanks to him that more attention is now paid to the needs of foreign students.
That report by Film Sanna was presented by Susan Holton. And before we end up this edition, a look at the main stories we've covered for you in the last 25 minutes. The Rwandan government has said it is committed to the ongoing efforts by regional leaders to bring peace in eastern Congo, despite yet another UN-leaked report accusing it of supporting the M23 rebels. Kenya's Prime Minister Raila Odinga has formed an alliance with the country's Vice President Kalonzo Musyoka to contest the country's presidency next year. The leader of Sierra Leone's opposition party, Julius Maada Bio, says he will now accept the results of the recent presidential elections after initially calling on a boycott of all government activities. And there we come to the end of this edition of Africa Link. Remember, we are always interested in your thoughts about this program. You can send an email to feedback.africa@dw.de or a letter to our post address, Africa Link, DW53110, Bonn, Germany. Africa Link will be back again at the same time tomorrow. Do join us if you can. This is Isaac Mugabe in Bonn.